This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here with another edition of Medical Frontiers. Tonight, we're going to be talking about breast cancer and the walk-in mammography program at AHN. And how are you this evening, Rob?
I am looking forward to Dr. Miller's return engagement here tonight.
Yeah, that's right. It's always nice having him back. I know his eighth grade teacher.
Yeah. Who was that?
Her name was Joni Vukelich. It wasn't. You had her when she was married. Yeah, in Wheeling, and her husband was a resident mate of mine, and he practiced orthopedic surgery in Wheeling for his career. And they retired in Hilton Head. But I was talking to her the last time that Matt was on, and I said, "Do you remember Matt Miller?" "Oh yeah. He was a great student." I said, "Are you talking about the same Matt Miller?"
Well, Matt, where are you from originally?
Wheeling.
I was born and raised in
Wheeling, West Virginia.
Well, Then I think it's appropriate that we take time to send out our thoughts and prayers for the drowning victims. And I'm sure you're well aware of it, Matt. That's a very sad story, what's happening in West Virginia.
Yeah incredible. Those rain, it's amazing how many inches of rain over a 24-hour period.
Yeah, well, they got 4 inches of rain in 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's nuts. How can that happen?
Absolutely not.
So sad. Thoughts and prayers out to the folks in West Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our guest is Dr. Matthew Miller, and Matt is a radiologist and a specialty in mammography, diagnostic studies, imaging of the breast for cancer. And it's great having you back.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and he has a couple boys, 6 and 3, and AHN is happy to really have quality people like Matt working in such an important area, because we know, and we talked about this, Rob, in the tease, that if breast cancer is diagnosed early, it's close to 100% curable, you know.
Absolutely.
And I want to start out, and I know that you have a personal story. And we talked about it the last time you were on, but I think that's one of the things. Rob was asking me, what makes people go into medicine and different specialties and so on. And I think your story is just a wonderful. Tell us about your wife.
Sure. So I was a third-year medical student, and my wife felt a lump in her breast. She was about 26 or 27 years old, and she went to her gynecologist and also felt the lump, and so they sent her to a surgeon, and the surgeon did an excisional biopsy, and the excisional biopsy came back as benign, and she was like, "Well, you know what, I still feel a lump. I still feel it. It's still there." And at that point, I was senior medical student. I was like, "Well, let's get a second opinion, go to the academic center. We have a dedicated breast center, dedicated breast surgeons, radiologists. They'll take care of you." And so they were doing some follow-ups and whatnot, and once she got to the point where she was close enough to 30, they said, let's get a mammogram. We usually don't like to do mammograms for people under 30. So she was close enough. She was 29. They did a mammogram. They found some calcifications. And at that point, they thought, okay, it's probably related to surgery, because it was in the same area where her surgery was. Did a six-month follow-up, and the calcifications changed. And at that point, they decided to biopsy it, and it came back as DCIS, which is stage 0 breast cancer. I was a first-year radiology resident.
Oh,
that
boy.
Crazy. World turned upside down.
Yeah.
But she's doing great. 12 years.
12 years. She's been clean ever since. And her surgery was bilateral. Both breasts were removed, and she had augmentations. at the time, and reconstructions, and she's just doing great.
Correct. So, I mean, she had they gave her the option, because it was stage zero, it was kind of localized breast cancer. They gave her the option of lumpectomy, localized treatment, but she was young enough to where she made the decision, I would rather have mastectomy. And it's a good thing that she did, because after the surgery, she found out that she had a genetic mutation, BRCA2 gene mutation, which no family history whatsoever. That was another thing that was surprising.
Tell us a little bit about the importance of the BRCA designation. What does that really mean, Matt?
So there are a number of different genetic mutations that can elevate your risk for developing breast cancer at some point in your life. The most common, the most documented, the most well-known are the BRCA1, BRCA2 gene mutations. BRCA1, it's almost a certainty, over 90% chance of developing breast cancer in your lifetime. BRCA2, a little bit less in the 60s to 80s range. But both of those genetic mutations, prophylactic mastectomy, which would mean taking your breasts off before you develop breast cancer, is an option. Some patients choose not to do that. And, at that point, we recommend supplemental screening with not only mammography, but with MRI as well.
Yes.
So anyone who has an elevated lifetime risk of developing breast cancer, getting an MRI in addition to mammography is important.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And in your career, you're a very young man, but there's been a lot of improvements in who should be screened and who can wait and that type of thing. And then of course, once the diagnosis is made, biopsies and then, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, all those things come into play. It's a team effort with every patient.
And it's incredible the strides that we've made just in my time practicing. I mean, I tell patients now when, you get diagnosed with breast cancer, it's not what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. We've gotten very good at treating this stuff.
Well, back when I was in general surgery, before I was in orthopedic residency.
A couple years ago.
It was a couple years ago. We're doing radical mastectomies, mm-hmm. right down, take muscles and everything, mm-hmm. right down to the rib cage. I mean, terrible, mutilating surgery, painful recovery, et cetera, and we've just come such a long way.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, a lot of times, and it depends on the tumor burden of the breast and also patient wishes, but a lot of times we can do localized therapy for surgery and so that we can conserve the breast.
So you have a lot of reasons to be in the subspecialty that you're in.
Absolutely.
Look at your wife every day and think, early diagnosis, and a cure. And
100%.
So the chances of her having a recurrence or anything are pretty low.
We still do our due diligence. Mastectomy doesn't mean 100% of the breast tissue is gone, but the majority of it is.
Yeah.
So, physical exams, being cognizant of what your breasts feel like, she's very, very diligent on that. We get an MRI every 2 to 3 years. There's really no data that supports that, but it makes everyone feel better. And that's what the majority of people who've gone through it.
And before we take our break, men can also get breast cancer.
Yes. 1% of breast cancer occurs in men.
Yeah.
I see it a couple of times a month.
Yeah. Is the ratio for women still about 1 in 8?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. As Rob was asking me about that, it's pretty interesting how that has stayed pretty stable for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about breast cancer and the walk-in mammography at AHN. It's coming up. We're going to be talking about that date. And if you have any questions about breast cancer, mammography, whether or not you should or should not have it, that type of thing, give us a call, 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back on Medical Frontiers for this next segment. We're talking about breast cancer and mammography with Dr. Matt Miller. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. We were talking during the break that, it was 1 in 8 for the women, what is the percentage in men?
So 1% of all breast cancer occurs in men.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what if they're BRCA?
So at their bracket, they have an elevated risk compared to the general population of men, but it still doesn't put them
It's not as bad as on the female side.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
So they're not recommended
there's no
to have double mastectomies or
correct.
Anything like that. You know?
Correct.
So they're just at a higher risk.
Men should be vigilant about changes in how their breasts feel. Now, the vast majority of men who come to the breast center who feel something get diagnosed with what's called gynecomastia. Which is a benign thing. It sounds like a scary word, right? It's a big
it's
word.
It's just an enlargement
It's just proliferation of the breast tissue.
Because all men have breast tissue.
Exactly right.
And the gynecomastia, they have more of that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Can they be followed with mammography?
No, we don't follow. So gynecomastia is a benign thing. We don't follow it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if they're in a higher risk.
Higher risk? Right? No, we don't. We still don't. I mean, there is no. There is no instance where we recommend routine screening mammography for men.
Okay. Okay. So for women, mm-hmm. when should they have their first mammogram?
So average or low risk women average or low risk for developing breast cancer, women should start having screening mammograms at age 40.
Okay.
Earlier, if you're high risk, as we talked about.
Okay. And if they're not at a higher risk genetically, what if they have a first-degree relative who has had breast cancer?
If you have a first-degree relative, you should start screening mammography 10 years prior to when that first-degree relative got diagnosed. So if you have a mother who got diagnosed at 45, you should start at 35.
35, yeah. Okay. And how about for women who are not genetically at risk, how often should they have a mammogram after 40?
So studies have showed that annual mammography saves the most lives. Now, there's a couple different recommendations out there. The United States Preventive Task Force, American Cancer Society, American College of Radiology, all organizations, all entities agree that annual mammography starting at the age of 40, we all agree that we should start at the age of 40, annual mammography saves the most lives.
There was some controversy here a few years ago. One of the countries, Finland or was it Denmark that said no more mammograms?
I don't remember what country it was, but
I think it was one of the Scandinavian countries. They sort of outlawed mammography.
I think they backtracked on it.
Because they were afraid of the radiation,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
How about the radiation of a mammogram?
So that's a big bugaboo about the patients who come in get scared of getting the radiation from a mammogram. And it's important to note that the dosage of radiation that you receive from a mammogram is the same dose as a transatlantic flight to Paris.
Okay.
So you don't see people turning down a Paris vacation because of radiation. They shouldn't turn down a mammogram that could potentially save their life.
And the other thing is sort of a dichotomy is if you're afraid of the radiation, and if you end up with breast cancer, you may need radiation to help cure it.
It's different. It's higher. It's higher dose of radiation.
It's a higher dose,
for sure.
Right.
For sure. And, absolutely. But yeah.
And more possible side effects and all that kind of thing. So it's one of those things that sometimes you can point out to somebody. Well, you want a little bit of radiation now or a lot later?
And I think it's important to note too that there has never been a documented case of mammogram-induced breast cancer.
Oh.
So mammograms detect breast cancer; they don't cause breast cancer.
The other thing that sometimes comes up is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's my understanding that trauma is not a factor in breast cancer.
Correct. Correct. Trauma can lead to lumps and bumps in your breasts. Bruises will sometimes calcify, and you'll feel it, and you'll think that there's a lump that wasn't there before, and it might have just been the door slammed on your breast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Your dog jumped or your grandkid jumped on your breast. It can cause symptoms, but it doesn't cause breast cancer.
Okay.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't get you shouldn't still get it checked out.
Right.
You should still come in and get it checked out.
Absolutely. So. And just a little bit about self-examination. Still important.
Still important. Absolutely. So I tell patients that it's less important to know exactly how you do it. You know, you can see a medical professional, a radiologist or a primary care doctor. They can show you exactly how they do it. However you decide to do a self-examination, you should do it the same time each month, the same way. So if you know, it's three fingers, three circles, three pressures on your breast, if you like doing it that way, having an idea of what your breasts feel like the same time each month, mid-cycle tends to work best, so 14 days after your period, that's the most paramount thing, knowing a change, feeling a change,
yes,
noticing something that's different.
Yeah. Nobody knows their body better than the patient themselves.
Correct.
And so the change is important, and especially if that change lasts for a while, you know, weeks or months or whatever, it better be checked out.
Better be safe than sorry. Absolutely. And right. That, you know, I tell patients, we're the experts of the medical side of things. You're the expert of you. We can only know about you what you
right.
tell us.
Right.
So never blow off a symptom. Come in and get it checked out.
Absolutely. Dense breasts. What's a dense breast?
So your breast is made up of two types of tissue, fat, which is like fat everywhere else in your body, and then the density, which is the milk-producing tissue and ligaments. That milk-producing tissue and ligaments, that density, forms these cloud-like appearance on a mammogram. It's white. Different women, it's like a fingerprint, right? Different women have different amounts of the dense tissue in their breast. The difficult thing is the cancer also appears white on mammography a lot of times. So the higher density of your breast, the harder it is for us to detect breast cancer. And if your breasts are extremely dense, then we may recommend supplemental screening with ultrasound or MRI. Mm-hmm. There's a new form of mammography, contrast enhanced mammography, which is becoming more and more in demand, and that's something that we're going to be.
That's where you are injected with a dye,
and then we'll do a mammogram and see what part of your breast enhances.
Yeah. Okay, this is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about breast cancer and mammography with Dr. Matt Miller, who is a specialist in mammography. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. Remember, you can always make an appointment with AHN physicians by going to 412-DOCTORS by phone or on the internet, ahn.org. We'll be back.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network.
Okay, we're back for another segment of Medical Frontiers. Tonight we're talking about breast cancer and walk-in mammography with Dr. Matt Miller. He's a subspecialist, radiology individual who has a special training and interest in breast cancer. And we're so happy to have him as a guest. It's always a pleasure to see somebody who not only is well-trained, but likes what they're doing. And I can tell, I've told a lot of people when I guess come in on Medical Frontiers, I can tell in about 30 seconds if they're happy about what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And Matt is always smiling, and because he knows he's doing good. And if we can pick up those tumors in women who have developed breast cancer, we can do it early enough. We know that the outcome is going to be so, so satisfactory, not only for the patient, but for the team that takes care of the individual. It's really great. So give us a call at 866-391-1020. 3D mammography, is that routine now? Does everybody get 3D?
It's standard of care, yeah. So
okay.
that was something that was developed about 15-ish years ago, and it was relatively slow on the uptake a little bit, and then it just kind of took off once the data shows that it's beneficial. We detect 1 to 2 more breast cancers per 1,000.
And once the insurance companies realized
exactly right.
that it was good, they would rather pay for a 3D than treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly
so,
right.
You know, it's an economic
exactly
advantage
right.
to do that.
Yep.
Ultrasound.
All the above.
Ultrasound for the breast.
Yeah. What about it?
Well, tell me about it.
We do it a lot. So
why?
so a lot of people think, not a lot of people, but there's a subset of people that want to come in and say, well, I don't want a mammogram. I don't want to get squished. I don't want to have the radiation. I just want to have an ultrasound. An ultrasound is a good tool, but it is an imperfect tool. It is a supplemental tool to mammography. We detect things on mammograms that we can't detect on ultrasound. Consequentially, we can also detect things on ultrasound that we can't detect on mammography. So, you know, we use mammogram to screen, and then ultrasound can help us evaluate things that we see on the mammogram and see whether or not they're suspicious enough to warrant a biopsy or to follow something.
So there might be a question.
Correct.
That is not completely answered by mammography. Mammogram.
And that's when we turn to ultrasound to get a deeper evaluation of it. We can also do screening with ultrasound as well, but that involves basically taking the ultrasound probe and running it around the breast.
Okay. MRI. When do you recommend MRIs?
MRI, we kind of talked a little bit about it, but the vast majority of MRIs that get performed are either high-risk patients, patients who have a greater than 20% lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. Sometimes they have genetic risk, family risk, whatever. They've been diagnosed with a high-risk lesion like atypical ductal hyperplasia. We'll get them to have an MRI on a yearly basis in addition to annual mammography. And also patients who have been diagnosed with breast cancer recently, haven't had surgery yet, will get an MRI often to look at the extent of disease. So we want to make sure we're getting a full picture of the breast before we decide on surgical options. And so if there's a vague mass that was detected, maybe it's a lobular cell type, or you know, in a patient with very dense breasts, we'll do an MRI to see, okay, how truly involved is this cancer.
And you had mentioned when we were talking pre-air time about MRI with contrast, mm-hmm. or there's a contrast, a dye injected into the veins, and then look at the MRI with contrast. Has that been helpful in some cases?
Yeah, so there's breast MRI. You can't detect breast cancer on MRI unless it has contrast. Now, there's contrast, which you might be referring to as contrast mammography, which is a newer thing that we actually don't offer yet at AHN. We're looking into developing that within the next year or two. Mm-hmm. But that's been shown in early studies to be very promising at also helping us detect breast cancer.
One of the things that is always done, I guess, when the patient has surgery is looking for sentinel lymph nodes where the cancer may have spread to, especially to the armpit, to the axillary area, and so on. Can that be picked up with any kind of imaging at all prior to surgery?
Yes. It's reflex to any time we recommend a biopsy on a patient, we will evaluate the lymph nodes with ultrasound. So that's another area where ultrasound is helpful, where we will evaluate the armpit and see if there's any lymph nodes that look abnormal or enlarged, and we may do a biopsy on one or of those lymph nodes as well.
Okay. And my understanding is that, you know, back in the dark ages when I trained, it was very often done where complete node removal of the armpit on that side and so on. And so the chances of lymphedema were like 100%. Tell us a little bit about that. The chance of lymphedema has decreased considerably.
Yeah.
And there's actually some treatment that if you do have that swelling.
Absolutely. And I defer a lot of that to my surgical colleagues.
Sure.
But, there's always, we actually had a meeting last week about recent guidelines that have coming out about, when to do a sentinel lymph node biopsy, which is, you know, taking one or a couple of lymph nodes versus doing a full lymph node dissection. And again, the surgeons are the ones that dictate that, usually preoperatively, sometimes intraoperatively. But when we can preserve some of the lymph nodes in the armpit and not take all of them, not do a full dissection, then the chances of developing lymphedema are drastically lower. And so we've been developing better tools to help us make that decision. And again, it's kind of a case-by-case basis.
Sure.
But the number of people who have been getting lymph node dissections has decreased significantly.
Okay. And the treatment really is a case-by-case for all breast cancer, all cancers, where sometimes surgery is indicated, sometimes chemotherapy is indicated, sometimes radiation therapy, and sometimes all together. You know, so it's a team effort. How many people were in these meetings that you talked about?
Tens, upwards of 40 to 50 people sometimes.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's great. So you have a lot of minds, a lot of brilliant minds coming together. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all treatment for breast cancer. It used to be. And I think that's the beauty of all cancer, not just breast cancer. But, you know, that's where cancer therapy is led, is to this team-based approach where you're going to have oncologists, radiation oncologists, surgeons, physical therapists, radiologists, all coming together to develop a personalized treatment plan for each patient.
Yeah, because not like you said, not one size fits all.
Correct.
And each one is an individual, and you can't put everyone in the same basket. And that's a wonderful word. And sometimes we don't give enough a shout out for the team members. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the physicians who are making the diagnosis or doing the surgery, treatment, and so on, they get all the accolades, but they can't do it alone.
Oh, yeah. Every physician or clinician that you see in your treatment journey is backed by a number of support individuals that individual wouldn't be half as effective as they are without their support staff.
And we also have support groups.
Absolutely.
You know, women who've gone through breast cancer volunteer to help women who have just been diagnosed and that type of thing. And we have psychologists available and psychiatrists available for emotional support and so on, and nurse navigators to help take the patients through the tour of diagnosis and treatment. It's just so important. And every one of those individuals, you say, is important. And if we don't have that team, we don't have good care.
Correct.
Yeah. You know?
Correct.
Okay, what do you see out there in the future, Matt, in your area, this area of diagnosis of breast cancer?
Sure. I think there's a number of different frontiers that are going to hit breast cancer detection, breast cancer treatment. I mentioned one, contrast mammography. I think that has the potential to really revolutionize our diagnosis of breast cancer, whereas, you know, it will fit in a lot of the area where MRI currently does. And instead of having to lay flat on an MRI table and go through a 30-minute scan, you can have a contrast mammo and it takes, 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that artificial intelligence, you know, that's the big buzzword in all of medicine at this point, right? But there's a lot of AI that is really out there studies are showing very promising things that's going to help us detect breast cancer a lot better.
Okay, well, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. We'll be back after the break. Okay, we're back for our last segment of Medical Frontiers. We're talking about breast cancer with Dr. Matt Miller. He's a radiologist who has a subspecialty in mammography. Let's go to our phone lines. And Helen, you're our first caller. Do you have a question?
Hi, Helen.
Hi, yes. I've had a history of breast cysts. I started getting them when I was 28, and I just assumed I had cancer. And I waited 2 years before I went to a doctor. And he aspirated it. And he said if that would have been cancer, it would have been up into your neck. And over the years, I've had multitudes of them. I stopped getting them when I was 50 or went through change of life. But is there some reason why women get a lot of breast cysts and not cancer?
So thank you for the call, Helen. The incidence of breast cysts is about 80%, 75 to 80% of women have a cyst or multiple cysts in their breasts, and the majority of women don't even realize it. If we scan 10 patients, we'd find cysts in 8 of them. Now, some women, not all cysts are created equal, right? Some women have an exorbitant amount of cysts, and that can be challenging because they feel lumpy, right? The good thing about cysts is that if it is purely a cyst, if it is nothing but fluid, it doesn't have any nodularity to it or whatnot, it has a 0% chance of being breast cancer. So the best thing for someone in your situation to do is to continue getting the mammograms, continuing follow-up, get the imaging, and if you notice a change, because cysts can change. Cysts can get bigger. Cysts can get smaller. You know, come in and get it checked out. It's better for us to tell you that, oh, no, it's a cyst, than for it to, you know, you rest on your laurels and you think it's nothing and it ends up being something. So it does, okay. It does present a challenge, but we deal with that.
Well, I haven't had a cyst for years, but the last procedure I had was a stereotactic breast biopsy. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw something showed on the mammogram. It was calcification, mm-hmm. and that was benign.
Good.
But what I'm trying to say is, if a woman has a lump, don't be afraid to go to the doctor. Go. It's better to go than to sit and worry like I did.
100%.
That's what I'm trying to get across.
100%. Thank you for that sentiment, Helen, because that's so important. Absolutely. Thank you for the call.
Thank you very much, Helen. We really appreciate it, and that was excellent advice. That's what we've been preaching on Medical Frontiers for 34 years. If you find something that doesn't seem to be right, talk to your PCP,
yep.
And they may not be able to make a diagnosis, but they can refer you to somebody who can. And like we have said for years, for decades now, if you make an early diagnosis, you have a much better chance of having a cure. If you let it go and it becomes stage four, then things get kind of dicey, you know, absolutely. Menopause. When should women stop getting mammograms, or should that go on until they're in their 80s, 90s, or 100?
So I've done mammograms. I've seen mammograms in patients well into their 90s. And so there is no cold, hard cutoff for when you should stop getting a mammogram. The recommendation is if you think that your physicians think that your life expectancy is 10 years or less, then mammography might not be beneficial. But who's going to make that determination? If you are healthy enough and you want to continue putting your best foot forward and you want to see if you have breast cancer, come get a mammogram. We're not going to turn you away because of an age.
Okay, tell us about the walk-in mammography that AHN has coming up.
Absolutely. So we've actually been doing it since April, and it's been very successful at some of our locations. Not every AHN breast cancer breast center location, but a good number of them. And you can go to AHN.org if you just Google or type into whatever search engine AHN walk-in mammograms. You can find the different sites, and those are on Wednesdays. Through the month of June. So you have a couple more Wednesdays left. You do not need an appointment. You can walk in. You don't actually even need an order from your physician, though we recommend you talk to your PCP and get an order. But if you just, it's time to get a mammogram, come to one of our locations. Some of them off the top of my head are Allegheny General Hospital, Jefferson Hospital, North Fayette, and then a number of Allegheny Clinic Centers such as Swickley and Hempfield. You know, walk in and get your mammogram. It takes 25-30 minutes, and you can get the screening done. And it's just a flexible way for you to get screened.
Yeah, you don't have to have insurance.
Even if so, we have vouchers at AHN to help you. If you don't have breast insurance, let us know, and we can get you covered. That should not be a barrier for you to get your mammogram.
So there shouldn't be any woman in the entire area here who should not make themselves available for mammography because of financial reasons or whatever.
Correct. And I want to thank our partners who help us with that, Glimmer of Hope and they're wonderful partners.
Yeah, and you don't need an appointment. You just walk in.
Just walk in and say, hey, I'm here for a mammogram, and they'll take you.
Well, that's great. So fantastic. And, few words of wisdom before we say goodnight.
Sure. So number one is don't ignore a symptom. We talked about it, and Helen did a great job at explaining that as well. You know your body. You know changes in your body. And if you experience a change in your breast, something that doesn't go away, now if you feel something and it goes away and it's no longer there, well, okay, then that, you know, probably something benign. But if you notice something that comes and stays over the course of a couple of weeks to a couple of months, come get it checked out. Don't ignore it. It's better for us to tell you that it's nothing than for it to actually be something and for it to get worse.
And that's why it's so important to have that relationship with your PCP, because he or she knows you almost as well as you know yourself. And if you have anything that doesn't seem to be normal, last for a few weeks, get in touch with your PCP. We're going to say goodnight. We'll be back in 1 week. Thanks for listening. Medical Frontiers of next week, same time.
Medical Frontiers was an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers was intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.